Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Friday, December 14th. My name is Rob Doster. I have a good show on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with my buddy from ESPN, Myron Metcalf, and we talked through everything Javon Quinterly, we talked through everything Quade Green, and we talked about everything on the schedule for college basketball this weekend. It's a really good conversation. I do think you are going to enjoy it. Before I get into that, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast. In any app that you listen to podcasts in, any interactions that you have with this podcast, whether it's downloading, whether it's listening, whether it's subscribing, all of that stuff really helps us in the metrics. It helps us in the numbers. It makes my bosses happy. And when my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better show. So really, you're really just helping yourself out here. So say nice things about me. Give me a 5-star rating. And let's get into that conversation with Myron Metcalf. And now I am thrilled and hashtag blessed to welcome on one of my favorite college basketball writers from ESPN.com, the best dressed man in college basketball media, Mr. Myron Metcalf. Myron, what's going on, man? How you doing?
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me, man.
I am thrilled to finally be getting you on. I've been kind of pestering you about this for, what, like a year now?
It's been a while. But I'm on. I'm here, man. You know, good things come to those who wait, right?
I finally broke you down.
I always wanted to do it, man. You just had to get a couple green lights, you know?
No, I hear you. And I got to say, you know, people can say whatever they want about ESPN, but the writers on the college basketball side between you and Jeff Borzello are probably the two best dressed guys that we have on this side of the industry, I got to say.
I think Borzello takes that crowd. He's got a pocket square game that I don't have, man.
That's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff does it real.
So how about this? I don't know if I'm supposed to say this publicly yet, but I'm doing two sideline games for NBCSN for the Atlantic 10
congrats,
on our coverage.
Man.
Thanks. But here's the problem I have, right? So the suits that I have, I've never gotten a suit tailored. So this afternoon, yeah, I'm going to the tailor for the first time. I've never been to a tailor. I don't know what I'm walking into. I'm a little bit intimidated. Like, he's one of these old school Italian jersey tailors. So,
you're good.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to look good, but I'm very overwhelmed with the thought of having to walk in there and explain that I'm a 33-year-old man that's never gotten a suit tailored before.
No, how old is he? He's like over 50?
Yeah, he's old. He's old.
You're good. Just don't say what. You don't have to say anything. Just tell him what you want. He can probably look at you. Like, honestly, like the legit tailors I've been to, he can probably look at you and tell you all your measurements. It's amazing. Like, the dudes who are really good, like, he can probably look at you, give you your measurements, and just hook you up from there. So you'll look good, man. But sideline report, I've done a little bit of that. That's cool, man. It's a cool gig.
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about it, but luckily it's one of the games is going to be at LaSalle, and the other one's going to be at VCU, which I'm really fired up about. I've never been to a game at VCU with that crowd and kind of that excitement. So give me some tips. Give me some advice.
All you got to do is listen to your producer, man. Here's the problem with sideline reporting. Basically, it's like you'll know when they want to tag you in, you know, and you're a good reporter, so you'll have good information. You'll be great. It'll be nervous for like the first 10 minutes. You'll be nervous, right? After that, man, it'll be easy, and you'll enjoy it.
Wasn't your first sideline gig at Iowa State? Am I making that up?
I did it at Missouri. I did some other stuff. Like, I did the Kentucky Combine. I'd done other TV stuff, but that was my first real in-game sideline gig. Was Michael Porter's first game where he played 3 minutes, and we didn't know he was hurt. And then that was the last we saw of him, you know, for the rest of the regular season and the season opener. So all
Michael Porter had to do when he got to college was see that you were working sideline. He's like, nah, I'm done with this.
That was it, man. That was it, dude. Yeah, that was a interesting weekend, man, because we were expecting him to play and make his big debut, and then, you know, nothing.
All right, well, you know, I got to ask you another question, man. Have you ever faked an Instagram hack before because you posted something that you didn't want to be on social media?
You know, the best part about, I feel like, guys in our business who are around our age, right, is when we got in social media, for the most part, like, a lot of us had jobs where we did things that, you know, there's a readership, we're reporters. So, like, there was an accountability. So like when I started on Twitter, Instagram, every time I had an account, I knew like my employer, whoever that might be, is watching, readers are watching. So I never had this like, oh man, this is just for my boys and my friends. I don't care who else sees it. So I've never had to remove a post because every time I hit send, I'm like, ESPN could read this. And if it's something out of line, it could cost me my job and career. Or, you know, some reader could be offended. Or so I'm always thinking like that. So I've never had to fake a hack. But in the era of two-step verification, who could actually hack an account? That's the thing. Is like someone would have to have like your cell phone, your password, all these steps to actually hack your account today in 2018. So it's a really bad excuse.
And so for people that haven't caught on to the joke yet, we're talking about Javon Quinterly. He's the freshman point guard at Villanova. And after a game that Villanova lost at Penn, where he played, I think the grand total was, I want to say it was 4.7 seconds. He's in the box score as 1 minute, but he didn't play until there were 6 seconds left when Colin Gillespie fouled out. And then he got taken out of the game with 1.3 seconds left and didn't even finish the game. So afterwards, he went on, I believe it was his Instagram story, and posted something that said, this is why it was my second choice. And obviously, he had initially committed to Arizona, was going to go there before the whole Book Richardson FBI thing kind of came down. And once he realized like he might have made a mistake, he started posting things to make it look like he was hacked. He had Naz Reid, who is a buddy of his from New Jersey, tweet out something saying that his Instagram was hacked and go follow this new account. And no one believed it, man.
No,
not a single person believed it, but I did enjoy watching him try to cover his tracks. It really was funny.
Like, what are you doing, man? And this is Villanova, dude. Like this is Jay Wright. How does this help him? That's my thing with Javon. Like, we can talk about why he's not playing. At the end of the day, he's just not good enough. Like, I don't care. I mean, I know he's got potential, but he's not helping them.
I mean, it's really this simple. Yeah, yesterday I literally went and watched every single minute that he's played at Villanova this season. And the truth is this, he hasn't picked up Villanova's defensive concepts yet. He's a little bit lost, which freshmen are.
And lazy. And
he's just like, he's not good enough. He gets beaten off the dribble. He's still, you know, he's what, like 6 foot, 175 pounds.
Which is laziness, right?
Yeah.
Like to me, defense is an effort thing, right? Like, you can be an above average defender just based on energy at that level. Like, if you just commit to, I know obviously the intellect is important, but if you commit to playing with energy, like, you can make a lot of things happen. He doesn't play with energy. He's one of those dudes to me who's like, I either get if he doesn't get buckets, it affects everything else.
And that's the problem. He's not getting buckets. He's shooting 26% from the floor, dude, and 17% from three. He's got more turnovers than assists. As a point guard at Villanova, that's not going to fly.
Yeah, and to me, if you're coming to Villanova with that attitude of, hey, man, if I'm not scoring, then I don't care about my role in this game. Did you watch Brunson, Bridges, DiVincenzo? Did you watch Josh Hart? Like, are you sure you went to the right school? Because – if you watch those dudes, which a bunch of them redshirted, how could you come to Villanova with that attitude? Like, okay, I'm just getting buckets, you know. And I don't want to like say this about the whole Jelly Fam thing, you know, because whatever. I don't want to put a blanket on everybody who's attached to that. However, there are some dudes under that Jelly Fam umbrella who they like to get buckets and don't like to do anything else.
Yeah,
and that's hard when you're trying to play for an elite program.
Absolutely. And I have a theory on this. And I think that what has kind of happened here is, you know, the way that Jay Wright has built this program is that he wants to always have veterans on that roster. So he kind of has that culture ingrained, right? Like, if you're a knucklehead walking in and you're going up against Jalen Brunson every day in practice and he's kicking your ass every day in practice, you're not going to sit there and complain about having to sit the bench while he's out there playing 35 minutes a night, winning National Player of the Year, right?
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson's gone. Mikal Bridges was gone. We knew that was going to happen. Jay Wright thought that he was going to get DiVincenzo and Amari Spellman back, which is, I think, part of the reason why he felt comfortable bringing in Javon Quinterly, knowing that he may not necessarily at this point fit kind of that Villanova mold of a player, because he was going to be going up against Dante DiVincenzo every day in practice. And, you know, when you're going up against Amari Spellman and he's out there blocking shots and averaging 18 a game and shooting 45% from three, then you kind of know, like, okay, this is another level. I got to work my time. But yep. There are only two veterans on that roster that are guys that played at Villanova that aren't newcomers, that aren't the grad transfer Joe Cremo, right? Everyone else is either a freshman or a sophomore. So Jay's kind of in this situation where now he doesn't have that kind of culture ingrained because he doesn't have all the upperclassmen. So he's got to kind of rebuild that culture, but he also has young guys that haven't been exposed to it for 2 and 3 and 4 years. And if you're Javon Quinterly, look, I mean, all due respect to Colin Gillespie, he fits what Villanova wants. He's fine. I think he's a good backup point guard in the Big East. But Javon's probably giving it to him in practice. You know, he's talented enough where he can get buckets. He can probably get by Colin Gillespie. And I'm sure he's sitting there like, why is this dude playing in front of me when I'm the five-star freshman and this guy couldn't get minutes last year on Villanova's team? And I'm sure that kind of plays a role too, especially when you don't have kind of that the elder statesman on the roster to kind of work you through those things. Am I making any sense? Is there something there? Am I reading too much into it?
Yeah, I mean, having some of those vets would have been helpful for a guy like Javon. Just to learn what it takes to play at that level in a system like that with a guy who's won, and I think it was 136 games in the last 4 years before this season. It's a lot of games, man. And I think by those guys not coming back, now Javon thinks, to your point, I'm going to play now. I'm the dude. It's like, well, no. You still got to work your way into this rotation. You still have to do all the stuff that Brunson and Hart and DiVincenzo and Amari, all those guys were at the point you're at, and they had to prove something to Jay Wright, who's obviously looking for an holistic player, not just a dude getting buckets. And I think him seeing like this clear path, if you're Javon, it's even more frustrating for him because he's like, wait a minute, those guys aren't here. I should be playing now. But when you see the Instagram story, to me, we don't know what's happening in practice. We don't know how this dude is off the court. But anybody who does that after a game in December that, you know, your team has been struggling and you're not helping. I can see if he was, like, balling out and guys around him weren't helping. But he's not doing anything. He's been one of the worst players, and yet he's still putting that out. So, for me, Jay Wright is smart enough to understand, okay, not only can this dude help us on the court, but is he the kind of player that he needs to be on and off the court? Because if you're doing stuff like that on Instagram, are you saying that to teammates? You know what I mean? Are you second-guessing Jay Wright in practice? I just think this is a dude who's got to make a decision about whether or not he wants to be a good player, learn and grow, or if he needs to just get out of there and see what happens either at the next level or someplace else, because Jay Wright ain't going to change. He was winning championships before Javon. So what makes Javon think that anything would instantly change just because he's there? Like, I don't know. There are so many guys who came to that program who paid their dues. That's what that program's built on. And if you're going to go there, you better understand that. And Javon, it seems like maybe didn't think it would be the same for him, or maybe he was sort of delusional about the role he would play.
And it's not just paid their dues. They put in the work and they became pros. You know, like how much money is Josh Hart making right now? Would he have made all that money if he didn't spend 4 years at Villanova? How much money is Dante DiVincenzo making now? Would he be making that money if he didn't go through the growing pains that come at Villanova? Like, Amari Spellman went there, and in a year he changed his body from being
he was 320 pounds.
Yes, he was huge.
He was like, see, my problem with like the Javons of the world, like, and I'm not picking on Javon, but a lot of these 5-star kids, they think, how do I get to the NBA? Villanova and a lot of programs that are smart produce kids who can last in the NBA. And there's a difference. Getting there and lasting are two different things. And that is like a mindset thing. Jalen Brunson's going to play in the NBA for 15 years if he wants to. He's just that good, that savvy. Those are the kinds of dudes that he's producing. And a Javon, it seems like, just wanted maybe that instant success. And that, to me, is the problem. It's mindset with a lot of these guys who, if they don't succeed right away because they were so dominant at the prep level, they don't want to play. They don't want to play deep. They don't want to do the little things. They just want to ball out. And that, to me, is a big issue.
And the one last thing that I'll say about this, one point I want to make is that some of this, I don't know if it's 100% Javon Quinterly's fault, because he's been a guy that's been followed by mixtapes and had these stories written about him and has been more or less a celebrity in the city of New York since he was, what, like 15 years old, since this whole Jelly Fan movement started. So I can understand how when you're 15 and you get that kind of attention, it kind of breeds entitlement in you. And I can understand where that's coming from, which is why I hope he doesn't leave Villanova. Because right now he's not an NBA basketball player. I don't think it's really all that close. But if you stay at Villanova for 2 years, 3 years, and let Jay work with you and let him develop you the way that he's done with all these other guys, I think he's got a shot. I mean, the talent is there. It's the question of whether or not the defense is going to come around, the effort's going to come around, the attitude's going to come around. That's the big thing to me.
Yeah, Rob, where is he from?
He's from it's either just outside New York or
it's New York, Jersey. Though. It's New York, right? Yeah. All right, so let's I'm going to go through a story with you, right?
I'm ready for
it. New York kid. Is amazing, skilled, great offensive player, mixtape legend, right? Goes to college and struggles, right? How many times have you heard that story?
A lot.
Right? I mean, I'm not trying to, like, come down on New York, but my goodness, how many times have we seen this? Like, how many times have we seen these kids who get that New York street glory and then come to college and refuse to play as part of a system? I'm not saying that about all New York kids, but this story, man, has happened so many times. And Javon, to me, he's got to change his mindset. Like, you either want to play and learn and grow, or you don't. And that Instagram post for me, I know he's saying all the right things now, but that sounds like a dude to me who might be crazy enough to say, you know what? I'll see what happens at the next level. I won't get drafted. I won't get picked, but who knows? He might think he'll be better at the next level than he is here with Villanova. And if he thinks that, that would be a mistake.
Let's talk about another former five-star recruit that kind of was in that same situation. Quade Green at Kentucky. He obviously transferred. I believe it was Wednesday officially made the announcement. There were some rumblings over the summer that he was going to leave the program. I think he kind of saw the writing on the wall when they went out and signed two five-star freshman point guards coming in. What's your take on what this means for Kentucky? What do you see happening with Quad A? Where does he end up? Give me all the takes, Myron.
Well, I think I'm glad Quad A was mature enough to understand where he was and what was best for his career, because that's not an easy thing to do, especially at a place like Kentucky. Because when you're a five-star at Kentucky and you don't go pro after 1 year, there's already a group of people who think you're a failure. So you're already dealing with that. So to come back and to not be the guy your sophomore year, that's a hard thing to deal with. And I think you just understood, like, hey, man, I can be better elsewhere. But I do feel for Quade, good kid. I went to that blue-white game in Lexington, and you could tell, like, yeah, this is not going to work. You know, somebody's got to go, and it's probably him. But I hope he finds a good place, because I think he can be a heck of a player, man. Elsewhere, if he finds the right system. So, I mean, overall with Kentucky, is the Cal system still working? Because the idea of you're a five-star kid, you bring in all these elite five-stars, you know, you get the most out of them, they go on to play at the next level, and then you bring in more. I mean, there was a stretch where, what do you get, 4 out of 5 Final Fours? It's not working the same way because Cal's not getting the same five-star kids. I said this on another show the other day. My concern with recruiting analysis, right? And I mean, from the Borzellos of the world, all these guys do a really, really great job. So I'm not knocking them when I say this. But I remember growing up and feeling like there were 5, 6, 7 legit five-star kids in America. Like 5, 6, 7 kids who were better than everybody else, right? And then a bunch of 4-star guys who were really, really good. But like 6, 7 dudes where you were like, man, that dude is on another level. Today, I feel like we have so many kids that we put into that group. There's 30, 40, 50 of them. And we assume 5-star means they're all at the same level. No, that's not the case. Like a lot of these kids who are 30, 34, 35, they're not the same as these top five kids, but you come in with the same expectation. And Cal now is getting a lot of those guys who are not the top five level kids who can come in and make that immediate impact. They're closer to the 20s and 30s, yet with the same expectation because they're one and they're supposed to be one and done, and it's Kentucky. And I think that hurts these kids, man, mentally. Like it's tough to deal with that if everyone's saying you're an automatic pro, and they put all these five-star kids in the same category. But like Carl Towns was special. Devin Booker was special. John Wall was special. Like, you can put all those Kentucky kids in a completely separate group than the rest of them, but they're all being judged according to that standard. And I don't know what Cal does from here. I mean, he's got to deal with Chris Mack, who is crushing it on the recruiting trail. He's got to deal with Coach K grabbing all these top five, top 10 kids. Cal could have a rough go of it here in the coming years because Kentucky is no longer that school to those top 10 kids. And I just wonder how he's going to adjust and handle that going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point that not all five stars are made the same. The guy that's ranked 25th in the class is not the same as the guy that's ranked second in the class. Like, there's a reason Everyone already knows that R.J. Barrett's going to end up being a top three pick. There's a reason everyone knows Zion's going to end up being probably the number one pick at this point. And you just don't hear that same conversation with, like, Nick Richards.
Yeah. Right?
So it's – and I think the interesting thing is whether or not Cal can ever get back there, because I think that the secret's out that you don't have to go to Kentucky anymore to end up being a top five pick if you're a freshman. I think people have figured it out.
Bingo, man. You know what it feels like to me? Like, if Cal were ever going to leave and try to go to the NBA, whether that's as a coach or a GM or executive, now feels like the perfect time, doesn't it?
Yes,
like,
it does.
If he were ever going to go, and I know he said he wants to coach his son all 4 years, but if he were ever going to try to be an NBA GM or an NBA coach, I think he wants to be more of an executive, but now seems like the perfect time because, like you said, man, everybody thought K would be gone by now, right? Like, K would be retired. And not just if he wasn't retired, you know, as the kids say, washed, right? Done. You're outdated. And here he is still competing with the best of the best. So if you're Cal, man, I don't know how you navigate this. We didn't even talk about Penny, man. Like, Penny, you got to compete with Penny now to get some of these kids. Like, he ain't going anywhere. So it might be a rough couple of years on the recruiting trail, I think, for Cal. And Chris Mack is going to start getting more of those kids, too. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and the other part of it is you don't – the other guy in the state of Kentucky is no longer the one that everybody just kind of has to hate, right? You know, Rick Pitino, for better or for worse, was a guy that was very, very easy for the average fan to hate. Chris Mack? It's not easy to hate. Maybe for a Kentucky fan, he's probably easy to hate. But, I mean, mostly he's just kind of a regular dude that it is a little bit nuts. And how about this? I was at the Louisville – who were they playing? Louisville Marquette. And just watching him – I was sitting right next to the bench and just watching him go up and down the sidelines and screaming and punching water coolers when he was mad. He's very entertaining on the sideline. I think there was a clip of him after they beat Michigan State at home where he's just – he did his interview on the court, and he's walking off and just raising the roof to the fans and trying to get everyone fired up, and finds his daughters in the crowd. Like, people are going to really, really like him with kind of that bigger spotlight. But you're right, man. Like, so with Cal, I made this point on a different podcast, and I'm curious your take. I feel like everything he does is kind of stuck in the 90s in terms of, like, the offense that they run, right? They always have two big guys on the floor. They're always doing everything built around, we're going to get stops, we're going to kind of play slow, and we're going to attack the offensive glass, and we're not going to care about three-point shooting, and we're always going to have these teams where we have questions about how we're going to space the floor. And it all seems very kind of old, like the 2004 Detroit Pistons, where you have, you know, everything with pace and space and analytics and the three-pointers and layups and free throws, while Duke's out here playing basically as close as you can get to, like, an NBA style of, like, the way a roster is built with a point guard, a big man, and three wings, while Cal's kind of stuck, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And I just wonder if that probably plays a role in it too. Like, if you're watching Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett out here running up and down the floor, and you're seeing Jason Tatum get all the freedom that he gets offensively, and you know, you're watching Trae Young go to Oklahoma and shoot 800 times a game, and you're going to be the guy that goes to Kentucky where you're going to sit the bench if you don't play defense for 25 minutes a game. Yeah. It's just I can kind of see how, like, if I was a five-star kid, I probably would want to go to the place where I can get all those shots and score all those points.
Dude, I mean, it's – I think you hit it on the head in terms of the thing that people aren't talking about. A, Villanova changed college basketball in that not only recruiting, designing a system that works with this small ball revolution, right, and having these guys who can stretch the floor, big guys, but winning national championships like that. You know what's crazy, Rob? 2 years ago in the national championship game, we had Shemek Karnowski, you know, versus all the big bodies, Kennedy Meeks of North Carolina. We may never see that again. Like, we may never see, you know, four or five big guys on the floor at one time in a national championship game because of what you just said. Duke ain't playing two bigs, you know. Kansas, I guess if you want to call Dedrick Lawson that, when Azubuike's healthy. But Lawson is a 3-4. You know, that's how they use him. You know, Virginia, Michigan, with Iggy and what they're doing. Nevada. All these teams, it's almost like a couple years ago they realized small ball's coming. The game is changing. And Cal, like you said, just recruited to the same style. I think Kentucky's greatest problem, and you know, seeing them against Duke in the Champions Classic when I was out there, and then going out to Maui and seeing Gonzaga Duke, where like Gonzaga had Brandon Clark, who's, man, he's outstanding, right? But like Brandon Clark, who is versatile enough to switch and to guard anybody on the floor who's not a point guard, probably changes everything for Gonzaga. Rui Hachimura, yeah, he's 6'8 and bulky, but he's versatile and he's agile. And then you look at Duke, and it's like four of those dudes who are the same way. How does Kentucky match up against those teams? How does Kentucky match up against Michigan? How does Kentucky match up against a Nevada? All these teams, Tennessee, that can spread the floor, you know, that are not relying on that big man. In a way, it's Kentucky is recruiting for a system that hasn't really worked in 2-3 years consistently. Even yeah. North Carolina is trying to play small. Like, all these teams that we're used to seeing two big men on the floor at all times, they've washed that away, man, and they're doing something new, and Kentucky has to figure out how to catch up with that.
Yeah, and I think what I would say about the 2017 title game is if you look at the big guys that were on that floor, you know, Kennedy Meeks was a 13-10 guy and a senior that season.
Yes.
Like, Isaiah Hicks was a double-double guy and a senior. Shemek Karnowski is off playing professional basketball somewhere in Europe and was a double-double guy that – oh, by the way, it was like one of the best low post passers that you're going to find.
Great. So
like, even though they had those big guys, they were veterans, they were grown men, and they were good enough to play professional basketball somewhere. When you're looking at this Kentucky team, you know, you have sophomores like Nick Richards and PJ Washington who, you know, maybe they'll sneak into the second round of the NBA draft at some point. They're not quite there. You got EJ Montgomery who like has all the talent in the world but hasn't quite figured it out yet. So
yeah, he doesn't know it. Yeah, he's frustrating to watch sometimes.
Yeah, so it's just I think part of it is that was a year where you have two coaches that really understand how to coach those big guys with guys that were pros and also old. And I think that was the key. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the games this weekend, and then I'll let you get out of here, Myron. I think the biggest game is probably Gonzaga at North Carolina. I just saw some reports this morning on Twitter that said Coby White will be back, so North Carolina is going to be at full strength. It looks like none of the lines are actually official yet. They won't come out until tomorrow morning. But according to KenPom, they're saying that North Carolina is favored by 2 at home against the Zags. Who do you like?
Well, I think it's going to be a good game. I mean, that's good news on Coby. I think, you know, Gonzaga had it locked up at Tennessee and just kind of, you know, squandered that lead late. They're good. They're really good. I mean, Killian Tilly changes a lot for that team, him being out. But, like, North Carolina's been disappointing in a lot of stretches, too, right? Like, what's up with Luke May, man? What is he making, like, 31% of his threes after making almost 50% last year in ACC play? Cam Johnson has been up and down in their losses. He struggled. I think it was 8-for-21 combined. So I'm interested to see if North Carolina can put together a good performance against an elite team after what we watched against Michigan and them just getting dominated. But I like Gonzaga to me, man. I think Gonzaga – you know, yeah, they lost to Tennessee, but I think they played him tough to the end. Admiral Schofield, kudos to him. They match up well against those teams that are built that way. And I think North Carolina is built similarly in a lot of ways. So I think Gonzaga can go on the road and get a win.
The idea of Luke May, who's struggling, having to be guarded by Brandon Clark is kind of would be terrifying if I was Roy Williams.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you don't want that prop. Man, Brandon, have you been more impressed by a player more than you have been with Brandon Clark? Like, is he not the biggest surprise this season?
I did not see it coming the way that it came with him. You know, I knew that they really liked him, and I knew that there was a chance that he could end up being a good piece for him. But I thought he would be like the sixth man, someone that just kind of came in and gave him like 20 really good minutes a game. I did not think that he was going to come out and play. Like, he's probably going to be a first round pick now.
Dude, what do you do with Tilly when he comes back? That's the question. Now, Tilly's going to play, obviously. But now do you move Rui to the three?
I think you play all three of them. And then I think you just – they basically end up with like a six-man rotation with three bigs and then Perkins, Novrell, and Kispert and just rotate them all through, man. If you can play them –
they're going to be nasty.
Yes. Oh, they're going to be nasty. Oh, that's going to be so good. It'll be a lot of fun to watch. All right. Villanova at Kansas. It looks like on KenPom right now, Kansas is favored by 9.
Yeah, that makes – I mean, that sounds about right. But would you be surprised if it were 30? Tomorrow, I wouldn't be.
Here's the thing: like Villanova hasn't been playing all that well, but Kansas, like they haven't been beating people. They went to overtime with Stanford. They beat New Mexico State by 3. So, like, I would think that Kansas was going to come out here and just kind of whoop them. But I don't know. We'll see. Kansas hasn't really figured it out. What do you think's going on with them? Have you seen them yet in person?
Yeah, I saw them at Champions Classic. I saw them at an exhibition. So I've watched them a lot. I mean, Doak. I mean, we just talked about big guys. Like, I know he doesn't fit when you're matching up against a smaller team or late free throws, but he's important to them, man. I mean, he's consistent and reliable. And for me, like, to me, they're relying on LeGerald Vick's going to get hot and hit big shots, right? And that's a dangerous thing, man. Like,
especially
all
when he won't
there.
Show up for shoot-arounds on time.
Well, exactly. So you're relying on that dude. But, I mean – they're top 10 D, top 10 offense. Dedrick Lawson's a different kind of dude. He's just such a hard matchup, man. Like, he's just unique. But I think they miss Doak, man. I think he's just one of those consistent pieces, you know, strong rebounder, veteran. I mean, just a guy that they know he's always going to do his job. And with him gone, you got a new face in Dedrick Lawson, LeGerald Vick, who wasn't even going to come back. He's not much of a leader. I mean, nothing against him, but no one thought he was a leader coming to the season. And you got a bunch of young guards. So I think time more than anything with them. But I think they win tomorrow.
Tennessee is at Memphis in the rematch of that. Do you remember that 2008 game when it was number one against number two, Cal against Pearl?
That was the greatest game. One of the greatest games of the last 20 years, man. Just the atmosphere and the vibe. Like, I wish I was going to this one, man.
I gotta imagine great atmosphere. Is it FedEx Forum? Is it still called that?
Yeah, FedEx Forum, man. Great atmosphere.
I gotta imagine that's going to be a tough ticket to get. I can't find a line on the game, but I gotta imagine that Tennessee's going to be favored. Oh, here it is. Tennessee's favored by 10, according to KenPom. Do you think Memphis has a chance? Does Penny get this done?
Nah, I mean, Tennessee wins, but like 10 to me is too much, only because the atmosphere makes it 5 for me, like 5 or 6. Like that place is going to be crazy with Memphis fans. I mean, there'll be Tennessee fans there too, but that place is going to be crazy. So I think he'll keep it close just because, you know, those kids know what this game is. I don't see how he wins. I mean, they hit like 47% of their threes against UAB. So, I mean, I guess you'd have to start there. But, you know, unless Martin and Harris and Davenport all – put up huge numbers, man. You're not gonna get it done, I think, against this team.
Yeah, that Tennessee team's really good. It'll be interesting to see, though, because I think that Jeremiah Martin, to me, is a guy that kind of does not get enough attention in terms of how good he is. And Tyler Harris is one of these dudes. He's like 5'9" and just firing up 28 footers.
Yeah.
And I kind of love players that that play that way. I think the last game on Saturday, it's really going to be interesting. We got Butler, Indiana, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and then Purdue Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. Do you think that Purdue is going to get this thing figured out, and do you think Indiana is going to beat Butler?
Yeah, I'm picking Indiana, I think, in a close game. I mean, both teams could use it. You know, that's a quality win for both teams. I think Butler needs it a bit more because Indiana will have a lot of chances in Big Ten play. But, man, did you see Indiana's opening stretch? I mean, not their opening stretch, but the stretch that's going to continue Big Ten play for them, man. They start home at Illinois, then they go to Michigan, then they go to Maryland, then they host Nebraska, then they go to Purdue, then they go to Northwestern, and then they host Michigan on January 25th. Oof. Like, this is an Indiana team that could win, like, two of those games, right? So they got to get some momentum. I think Indiana wins this game over Butler. I mean, Butler's been – I know they beat Florida, but they can't score. I mean, they put up, what, 52 against St. Louis or something like that. But, again, rivalry game, all the emotions of that. I just hope it's a good game, but I pick Indiana.
Yeah, I think Indiana is going to get it done. I also think Purdue beats Notre Dame. I'm not sold on this Notre Dame team. And Purdue, oh man, they really need to win. They're what, 6-4 in the season now?
Yeah, we expected too much, I think. Like that senior class was amazing. And I know Carson Edwards coming back was big, but like, dude, they lost some really, really talented players, man. That's a hard thing for anybody to kind of recover from. But I mean, Mike Bray lost a bunch of guys too. So, you know, interesting to see where these teams will be tomorrow, but I pick Purdue too.
What I'll say about Purdue is this. They are 6-4 in the season, but their losses came on a neutral court to a really good Virginia Tech team. They lost by one at Florida State. They got smoked.
Should have had that one.
Yeah, they should have had that one. They got smoked at Michigan, which is going to happen to a lot of really good teams.
Happened to North Carolina, yep.
Yep, and then they lost by four at Texas in a game that Texas absolutely had to win after losing at home to Radford and VCU. So I'm not completely sold on them not being a good basketball team. I think that those are all, like, I don't want to say they're good losses, but they're understandable losses for a team that's replacing as much as Purdue has. So, but they got to get, I mean, they have to find a better support or a more effective way to get the supporting cast. Because in that game at Texas, Carson Edwards had 40 and everybody else had 28 points. That's just not going to get it done.
But are you surprised by that, though?
No, I'm not. That's
kind of the season for them, right?
Yes, that sums up what they are pretty much perfectly.
Yeah, that's who they got. That's who they're going to be. You know what I mean? So, but he's fun to watch, man.
He is, especially when he gets hot. But listen, Myron, I've kept you here long enough, man. You guys can find Myron on Twitter. He is at Medcalf by ESPN. You got any stories coming out you want to give a little shout out to?
Any stories? I'm working on different things. I just finished Ozark season 2, though, by the way. So
is that
I don't
good?
Know if you're into that.
I haven't seen the I watched
it's
the
great.
First one. I haven't seen the second one yet.
It's great. I'm waiting on Ozark 3, and then I got to see Creed 2 at some point. So, I mean, those are bigger priorities. Hey, I got some stories coming out, but I got to see Creed 2, man.
You're not going to give us any hints. So keep an eye out. Myron's working on some things, and when he's working on some things, then you know they're going to be pretty good.
Appreciate that.
Listen, man, I appreciate the time, all right?
All right, man.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.